Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. It's your Bia with us on this Thursday morning. Text line time permitting. We'll get to some more of your texts, 251-343-0106. Joining us on the line now, he has been gracious enough to move up a day. We appreciate that. But State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, joins us on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing as well as I can be doing for a dreary day in downtown Montgomery. So it is what it is.
Downtown. So what brings you to our fair capital city today?
So there was a board of adjustment meeting this morning, and then we have contract review this afternoon. And then, you know, anytime I'm in town, I try to schedule some other meetings to make the trip as efficient as possible. But with any hope, I'll be back in time for a basketball game in Baldwin County tonight. So that's the goal.
Well, you may. Well, it is raining, but I was going to say your stuff of legends when it comes to getting from Montgomery to Baldwin County. I don't want to know if I'd be giving too much away there, but yeah, I'm like, hey man, we'll leave at the same time, guys, and then I'll be getting to Hope Hull, and hey, I'm in Loxley. You're like, what? Yeah, so
no comment.
Yeah. And I do kind of lollygag around, but that's just part of the job. But I'm always in awe of your ability to make it back to the South in a timely manner. Hey, I guess we'll start here. Alabama Daily News story. The budget seemed to be general fund up and the ETF is flat. I don't know what to make of that. But you know, we've been hearing it for a while, and whenever we talk about what should we do with this ARPA money, or what should we do with, is there going to be another surplus? Oh, no, there's economic calamity on the way. And I guess in some ways it's true that the cost of things has gone up, but revenues seem to be stable, I guess, is a way to put it.
And that's not a bad thing, right? I mean, stable is good. Decreasing is bad. The problem is, as you correctly point out, the costs for the exact same amount of goods continue to go up. And so the inflation that certainly was started in the Biden era, in the Biden administration, with all of the flood of federal money into the economy, has created inflation that's just going to take a while to settle back down. And so that's starting to happen under President Trump. It just hasn't necessarily occurred yet. So the things that state government spends money on, whether that's roads or bridges or employees and, or prisons or, whatever else, it continues to be more expensive than it was the previous year. And so we can do less with the money that's available to us. Again, the good news is we're not in a decreasing, state just yet, and we've still got, at least flat or up just slightly. But it is a good opportunity, and this is how I look at it. It is a good opportunity to curtail the growth of government, right? Government will consume all the money that's there. We've done some good things in the state legislature here in the last couple of years, to whether it was tax cuts, tax incentives that are essentially make sure things don't go in the budget to begin with, or just write out rebates and send the money back to people. All of those things have kept government from growing as much as it otherwise would have, and this will be yet another opportunity to keep things in check.
I mean, and you and I talked about this a couple of years ago, and yes, the state of Alabama has avoided these budget shortfalls or shortcomings. They've avoided proration. But I remember back in the days of proration, I mean, the cuts, there was no choice, and you had to make a decision and start cutting things. And because we don't have that anymore, that it has sort of green lit a lot of growth of government.
Well, I'll take a little bit different and maybe contrary position on that and say this. We have put things in place that allow us to more accurately project revenues. One of the reasons we ended up in proration
so frequently when the Democrats were in charge is because revenues were overinflated, projected revenues, right? And so we have been more conservative in the way we project what the revenues are going to be. And we have consistently under budgeted, right, as it relates to projected revenues. That's a good thing. We've also put some statutory measures in place that require us to not budget more than an average of several years of revenues moving forward. And so that's another brake on growth. And then we have also required the establishment of all kinds of trust funds, rainy day funds, and savings accounts, in addition to paying down debt, to ensure that that money didn't go into, for instance, the general operating budget and instead went into savings, so that we could better moderate and weather what are the inevitable downturns. And so those types of deliberate actions keep us from being in the roller coaster situation that we were under Democrat control, which was what, you know, we ran out of money. Now what do we do? Cut. And so we've cut on the front end by limiting what the projections are. We've cut on the front end by limiting what revenue can be spent. We've cut on the front end by ensuring that you divert some of this to savings so that you can weather the storm when it gets here.
Yeah, but still, though, getting government, the trend to go in the other direction, and you know, David Bronner with an comments at AL.com about school choice and, you know, where we're spending our money and things like that. There are places, the PHIP stuff, and, you know, you hear these things, and the bureaucracy is concerned. But I think this is sort of
good.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think this is sort of the will of the voters here that is playing out. And, you know, they're going to cry foul, but that this is what they're going to have to start to. This is how they're going to have to learn to operate, right?
Right, and that's how you do it, right? So if you've got the bureaucrats whining, oh, we could have more money to do this, and we don't have the money to do this, and we wish we could absorb the entirety of this healthcare increase, why don't you have the money to do that? Well, the answer is because we have to live within our own means, and because we have planned, again, from a budget standpoint, statutorily, to divert some of these revenues to keep things in check. And so if the money was there to simply hand over $300 and some odd million to PHIP, we could do that. But now we're going to be in a position where we say we can't. And so when we say we can't, then what happens? Well, now you've got to pay for some of the increased costs of your own health insurance, of your own health care. And it's not just borne by the taxpayers because, well, frankly, we've set up the system to do just that, right? To limit the amount of money available to just say, oh, it's okay, we got it. Oh, we can do that. Oh, the taxpayers are going to backstop you. And so that's by design. All of that is by design, and I think is very smart to protect the taxpayers against having too much money readily available to just cover whatever cost pops up.
Does this when he makes a statement, when David Bronner makes a statement like this, and he singles out school choice, how much of an impact does that have? It seems like it's cherry picking a little, that maybe there's some other places you could come up with some of the money to cover this 300 something odd million dollar shortcoming. But to me, it just seems a little too convenient to cry foul about that.
Look, healthcare costs are a direct reflection of increased consumption. We are consuming, our employees are consuming more healthcare than they did previously. That's a fact. Healthcare costs are also going up on the provider side of things. That's a fact. But what's the one thing that's not a factor? And that is the taxpayers didn't have anything to do with that. They're not consuming more healthcare, right? That's the public employees that are consuming more healthcare. They didn't make the medical care become more, healthcare become more expensive. They didn't have anything to do with that. A lot of that was driven by policy of the Biden administration. And so it's imperative to make sure that, you know, that everybody knows this is not a buffet. You can't have all you want and it only costs one flat rate. That's not how this could or should work. Look, we can decry certain policies that you know, that some individual may or may not agree on from a policy standpoint, from an education standpoint, and say, hey, that costs too much. Again, I look at this as students' money, parents' money, and them making the best decision for how they educate their children, not money that we could use to backstop health care for teachers. That's not the primary responsibility here. The primary responsibility is to educate kids, not the other way around.
Yeah, it's just it always comes back to that. It's almost too convenient, right? You look at, you and I were talking about it last week with the High School Athletic Association. This is, as you said, this is the ship they're going to go down with. But the bureaucracy, it's interesting that I guess they never anticipated school choice getting this far down the road in Alabama. And now here it is, and it almost seems like desperation from these places. You know, well, and not that I wouldn't expect it from the RSA, and because it does seem to be more left leaning, but certainly high school athletics and this, the way y'all tell it, and not just you but others, that you have a leadership there that's just predisposed to oppose these education policies.
Well, they certainly are, and all I will say is wait until next year, next fiscal year, when the income requirements come off for school choice, and you start seeing, you know, regular folks who are not subject to these income limits, this percentage of poverty level income limit that's there now, start being able to take advantage of school choice, and then it's really going to be on, and we get more back to a more of a free market type of approach to education, which I think from a principal standpoint is a great thing, and so that will further again curtail the amount of money available. But Jeff, you got to realize these are the same folks that are complaining that we've seen a 27% increase in per pupil spending in the last 5 years. That's a huge increase in per pupil spending. And that's a good thing. We got to realize that at some point, it's not a never ending, again, buffet of you can have everything you possibly want. You've got to constrain that somehow, or it'll eat everything that's on the table.
So, and I know I asked you this last week, but when the income limits come off, that this won't be like, you know, charter schools were for a while, or the Accountability Act, that this will be ultimately funded by the state of Alabama, the CHOOSE Act.
It's certainly my goal to make that happen. And I certainly hope that my colleagues have, you know, the fortitude to stand up and say, listen, this is a policy decision that we have made. And as Republicans, our constituents are demanding to utilize this program. And if it's good for the, you know, good for the folks that, you know, whatever percentage of poverty level, then it ought to be good for those that are in poverty too. There's what's different from about those children. And we don't need to be in a Robin Hood situation where we're just covering, you know, those that are not earning as much money. If it's a principled decision that this money goes with the child and that it is there for the education of the child, then it shouldn't matter how much your parents make. It shouldn't matter where you go to school. It's there for you. And, you know, this is a very simple principled argument that's being made, that I'm making and that others are making, and we ought to stick to it. And yes, it will take more money to do that. And that money will have to come from somewhere, because it is a zero sum game. But understand that at the end of the day, it's still going to the same place, and that's to educate the child. That's where it should go.
This will be the impetus for a lottery push, you think?
I don't see school choice and the lottery going together.
I mean, I can see it. I totally can see, like, hey, we need a lottery because you guys like school choice. Yeah, well, you guys need to, how are we going to fund it? You better get behind an education lottery here.
Look, there's no question that as things get tighter, and you've seen that from Dr. Bronner too, right? You've seen conversations and his musings about, you know, the need for additional revenue, and oh, you should pass comprehensive gaming so that you can have additional revenue. There's no doubt, Jeff, as belts get tighter around the state house, as there is not as much supplemental money running around, or there's not these huge percentages in increase year over year, you will start seeing more of the voices that say, gosh, if we just had gambling, we'd have more money. You know, the question with the gambling legislation is, and always has been, what does it look like? who's winning, who's losing, whose ox is getting gored, because unfortunately it's never as simple as a simple lottery, right? Or clean lottery or whatever, somebody wants to put on.
The politics of it, Senator, are very convenient because the same people who are like gung-ho about school choice are gung-ho anti-gambling, right?
Yeah.
And I could, the cynic in me says, would somebody do this? Would they think about doing it this way? And I totally could see that.
Well, you may have just given them an idea because I haven't heard it yet. So we'll see if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, time will tell. And it's just like this, though. And I guess we're really going to see it here in the coming years where you have the budget chairman, and it took me a while to figure this out, Senator Albritton, Senator Orr primarily, they're like goalkeepers. They're not making it rain. They are powerful and they do rank high on the totem pole. But like their whole job, it sounds like a lot of times is just to tell people, no, we're not doing that. No, we're not going to do that. Sometimes they get overruled, but a lot of times they don't. I mean, it's a non-starter in a lot of places.
Well, I would argue that their job is to see the big picture, right? And the committee's job is to see the big picture, the big financial picture of where, you know, the state is, where the state's going, and to identify trends. And both, all four of the budget chairmen in the House and in the Senate do a good job with that. And yes, sometimes that involves saying no, because again, you can't have everything. But I would say that the difference in a budget chairman and just your, you know, regular, you know, freshman, sophomore, you know, been here 4 or 8 years or whatever, is that they have a big picture view of what's going on, whereas others may have a little bit more myopic, you know, hey, I'm focusing on my district and my district needs this or they want that. And so you really have to go to the chairman with a real coherent plan of how whatever you're asking for benefits the state of Alabama and not just a gimme list. And I think they do a really good job navigating that and keeping the budgets in check, because the failure is if we end up in a proration situation, if we end up where we have budgeted more than the revenues are, and that's never a good thing and not something that I see these budget chairmen ever letting happen.
Yeah, I agree. Senator, we got to get out of here. We're out of time, but thanks for coming on a day early, and we'll do it again next week.
You got it. Thank you for having me.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Barking holler needs the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life. Oh, so right.